What? I can't believe I'm hearing this. Wait a minute, let me rewind.
Welcome to Wise Words, a podcast of interviews, best practices and insights for entrepreneurship, finance, and technology, brought to you by the IBD Network, home of the Under the Radar Conferences and Dealmaker Forum. For the best of Silicon Valley, go to www.ibdnetwork.com.
Look at me. Look at me. Now listen very closely.
That doesn't look like the next generation of computing to me. It's old technology.
Welcome to Wise Words, a weekly podcast of interviews on entrepreneurship, finance, and technology. I'm your host, Sean Wise.
You're so wise, but like a miniature Buddha covered in hair.
Welcome back to Wise Words. On this week's show, we're very lucky to have Mr. Tom Hale, a senior VP from Adobe, who will be discussing building a platform and getting the whole world to jump on to your standard. Welcome, Tom.
Thanks very much, Sean. Nice to be here.
It's nice to have you here. Always good to speak to a company that's so well perceived as Adobe. Let's start with you, though, Tom. I know that you originally came from Acromedia, but you've been in the Adobe family for about 6 months. Let's go back in time a little bit. How does a guy with a BA from Harvard end up working for one of the world's best technology companies?
To tell you the truth, I actually started selling software on the retail floor of Egghead. For those of you who were born after 1980, Egghead was a retail software company that was basically stores, and you could go in and get all the hot new software, like, I don't know, the first version of Microsoft Office or Windows 3.1. I started there and quickly moved to a technology startup that was doing imaging software in North Carolina. I was there for 6 months before I said we had to move that company to San Francisco because that's where digital media was happening. And about 6 months after moving the company to San Francisco, we were purchased by a company called Macromedia, who was then very much in competition with Adobe and looking for an image editor to take on Photoshop. So that's how I came to Macromedia. And then at Macromedia, I kind of stayed for a good long time through the internet rise and the boom and the bust. And I guess about a year ago, a little bit more than a year ago, Adobe picked up Macromedia in a very large software public company merger, and that's how I ended up at Adobe.
You enjoying your
BA from Harvard? I don't think the BA from Harvard had anything to do with it.
What was your BA in?
History and literature.
And you're not using that every day in Adobe?
You know, I do use it every day, Sean. You know, I think it does help, obviously, to be able to have my concentration actually was history and technology, so I had some context to apply. But the truth is that this, you know, the technology market's changed so quickly and. Evolved so fast, I don't think anything you could really learn specifically in college, you know, other than general skills like how to communicate and how to write and how to think could be applied.
Well, writing and thinking are good skills to acquire, and I think that you're right. At the speed that the internet and all the related technologies are moving, it's almost like cat ears. So before you know it, what you're doing yesterday has already become history.
That's right.
What's that? What's the biggest change that you've seen as you've moved up the food chain of software from a cultural perspective, say from Egghead to Macromedia to Adobe, and as you moved up the internal organization?
Well, you know, I think there's the old saw about, you know, the difference between startups and big companies, and to truth be told, I think Macromedia, even in its you know, largest incarnation, 1,700 employees, still felt very much like a large startup. It was a large, small company, and you know, everybody knew each other and had largely had the same management for a good long time. You know, Adobe's a much, much larger company, and in fact, if Macromedia was a small, large company, or I guess Macromedia, Adobe is a large company, and I think, you know, the main differences are, you know, you don't know everybody. There's multiple strategies and multiple agendas, and you know, the scope and scale of what you have to do is much greater, and there's good that comes with that too, because the truth is that we can do things as Adobe that are just a totally different scale.
Absolutely, one of the benefits, and one of the benefits has to be that Adobe continues to make the list of Fortune's best managed companies. I mean, what's the secret, do you think, after 6 months of observing how you manage 2,200 people at Adobe that makes you time in and time out Fortune's, you know, on that list?
Well,
top 10 places to work.
I think, you know, part of it stems from having phenomenally successful businesses. But it's always easier to manage 5,200 people when your businesses are phenomenally successful, and that, you know, that enables you to provide lots of opportunities for individuals, to create interesting and new technologies that you can invest in that excite people, to have the ability to move the market and change the world, which, you know, I think motivates a lot of people very much. Those are all things that come with being a large, successful company, but I think there's something that was unique to both Adobe and Macromedia, which is a passion. And, you know, maybe this comes from the fact that both companies have DNA from Apple. Maybe it comes, you know, from kind of the focus historically on creative professionals who are passionate, you know, design-oriented people. But I think that passion permeates the employee base. And I'll give you a little bit of an anecdote here. One of my colleagues at Macromedia, who had left before Adobe, but it applies equally at Adobe, his title was on his card, he was the VP of Making a Dent. And the reason why he was the VP of Making a Dent, it was because the CEO had given him that card when he said, "So, you know, Adam, what is it that you want to do with your life? You know, what do you want to do here at Macromedia?" He said, "You know what? All I want to do is make a dent in the universe." And I think that kind of idea of wanting to change the world for the better is something that infuses both Macromedia and Adobe. And you know, now it's even stronger with the kind of unified Adobe vision.
You know, I want to just take a second, because I don't want people to think we're giving you a platform to corporate shill when you talk about how wonderful Adobe is. Here's a few facts that I was surprised. Well, I wasn't surprised. Here's a few facts that really solidified my own personal views. Do you know, Tom, that Flash has over 1 million active professional users, but more importantly, has almost a 98% adoption on internet-enabled desktops? And then Acrobat has just almost 88%. And then this number, I know you know, because, you know, everyone's options and benefits are tied to it. You guys did $600 million in revenue in 2005. So I don't want people to think we're just letting you be, you know, toot your horn. These numbers are incredible. To be able to have your platform adopted on 98% of the internet-enabled desktops in the world, does that ever give you pause?
Well, I think that goes straight to making a dent in the universe. I mean, I think those penetration statistics are interesting as numbers, but let me put it in a different frame for you, which is the Flash player, which is the little piece of software that runs inside of your browser that lets you, you know, have richer experiences, see the animations, and see the hear the content, watch the video, all the things that people are doing with Flash today. The truth is that Flash is the most distributed piece of software on the planet. So I just, you know, like, those numbers are great, but you really have to kind of soak in that idea that there's one piece of software that's the most distributed, and it happens to be an Adobe piece of software. Now, it's free, and I think that helps a lot, and it provides a lot of value, which is to say the things that you get to experience with Flash inside of the browser for free are interesting and useful, and people enjoy them. For the most part, I think some people don't like some of the advertising stuff, but that's sort of part of the equation. The other thing that's very, very important to recognize is that the rate of adoption of Flash, which is to say the number of downloads from our website where people get, you know, the latest version, if you will, of the Flash player, which is now version 9, we actually are capable of blanketing every internet-connected PC on the planet with the software in about 8 to 12 months. So again, so go back
wow.
to it's the most distributed piece of software on the planet, and then say, because of the rate of adoption is so fast, not only can we, you know, not only do we have this position, but we can iterate and innovate new technologies onto the internet desktops in the space of about 12 months.
You know, that's amazing.
You're
going to
say, wow, that's amazing.
Well, no, I'm going to say, wow, that's amazing. I mean, the Paris Hilton video adds a lot of value to a lot of listeners' desktops too, but it doesn't have that sort of adoption. Do you ever get the pause that if you screw up the next iteration, you're going to screw up that many users?
You know, fortunately, you know, one of the things I do think about is that if you ever started getting support calls on, you know, 700 or 600 million users, that's going to be a real problem for any software company who has to field those support calls. And to be truthful, I think, you know, we've been very, very careful, both as Macromedia and as Adobe, to make sure that we really constrain what it is that we do so that we can do it really, 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 really well. And I think that's actually been part of the secret of success of the technology. It's It's very small. It's, you know, it's a small, compact download. It does a lot of things. It doesn't do everything. You know, it's unlike, say, Java or something even larger, some of these other technologies from other players. We try and constrain what we do and do it very well, and I think that's been a big part of the success.
So focus is a big part of the success, and when we come back from the break, we'll be asking Tom Hale, Senior Vice President at Adobe, what the other secrets have been to getting the platform adopted. You're listening to Wise Words on the IBD Network for the best of Silicon Valley, www.ibdnetwork.com.
It's sponsored by
IBD Network. Producers of the acclaimed Under the Radar Conference are hosting the Momentum Growth Conference September 27th through 28th, 2006 at the Computer History Museum in Mountain View, California. Join tech heavyweights including Yahoo, Google, AOL, MSN, News Corp, Viacom, and many more. This year's conference will focus on the exploding digital convergence ecosystem from content creation to distribution and everything in between. For more information, visit MomentumConf.com.
And we're back. We're talking to Tom Hale, Senior Vice President at Adobe. Tom is just about to tell us the secret behind getting your platform adopted, or more importantly, what they've done at Adobe. Tom, you were just talking about focus and not being all things to all people, but you also mentioned making sure the footprint was small. What do you think has led to this rapid adoption of your platform?
You know, this is a great question because I think there are a lot of lessons to be learned, and I'm not going to say that I think we got everything right. We certainly learned as we went along. You know, if you think about it, I think it was 1996 or 1997 when I guess Macromedia at the time acquired a company that had the Flash technology, and we had another technology in the market called Shockwave, which was a Netscape plugin that allowed you to do kind of animation and interactivity. So we had this challenge in front of us, which is how do you make the Flash technology a useful platform? And just to be clear, the Flash player is free, but we sold and sell authoring tools and servers and stuff like that that talks to this client plugin or creates content for this client plugin, and that's the business that we're in. So it's one of these great chicken and egg questions, which is like, how do you get something out there so that people will want to target it as a platform, and that way you can build a business on it because they want to target that platform. Well, of course, the only way to do that is to get people to build content and target that platform, because that'll drive the adoption of the platform. So it was this chicken and egg question, and what we decided was that we needed to find some kind of way to jumpstart the ecosystem, to make the platform, you know, viable enough that a set of people would target it, and then we would grow that organically. So really the first kind of big bold move that we made is we made a deal with Netscape to bundle the Flash player. And at the time, if you recall, Netscape was a pretty significant player in the browser space. We paid them quite a lot of money for this, and that was sort of the first step. And then, of course, Microsoft came out with Internet Explorer, and they said, well, we've got to have everything Netscape did. So we did a deal with Internet Explorer. And in that case, I don't think we had to pay as much because, of course, they just wanted to have parity. And then, of course, the follow-on was we started to license it into Windows, and so it became a component of what would ship with the operating system, Windows and then Macintosh, et cetera, QuickTime. We did a bunch of sort of what you might consider distribution deals. And what was interesting is that about 1999, after a couple of years of having done this, you know, you had an ecosystem of people who were creating content, and a lot of this content were things like, you know, little animated cartoons or little bits of visual interest that they put on web pages, kind of what you know probably think most people think of Flash, is. And what was interesting is we started to study it. We realized that all of the OEM distribution in the browsers and in the operating systems was actually less important than the downloads that were happening from our site. There had been this sort of tipping point. It actually happened without us even knowing it, which is to say the kind of universe of content that was out on the Internet, you know, all these advertisements and movies and, you know, animations and things people put on their homepage and whatnot, all that content out there was you know, people were bumping into it every day, you know, using their web browser and going to surfing the web and being asked to get the latest version of the player. And that had wildly surpassed the volume of units of players that were going out through browsers and operating systems and whatnot. I know that was kind of a long explanation, but the key was that and this is actually true of Reader and Acrobat as well, is that the content Once you've built that kind of universe of content, particularly with these kinds of technologies, the pull to get the free viewer or the free player becomes so compelling. We did have to jumpstart it. We did do a good job by making it small and compact, but you know, people had to want to do it. You know, they had to want to see a PDF to download the reader, or they had to want to have this experience that someone had passed along and said, you've got to see this to get the Flash player.
Well, I think that was one of the keys, though, to the viral marketing, wasn't it? You gave people cool content, or you had third parties create cool content, but then they couldn't unlock the treasure chest without your key. And that sort of was...
Absolutely. I think that's right. I think, but it wasn't something that, you know, the developers, the content publishers, you know, the there had to be value in it for them. So, you know, for an example of creating a PDF and driving a download of the Adobe Reader, you know, the benefit to the publisher was they could create a document that they knew would print anywhere and could be viewable on any machine as long as someone had the reader technology, which was free. So it reduced the cost of publishing for them and increased the likelihood of their, you know, published document being viewable and printable on other devices. In the case of Flash, the publishers, you know, they wanted to use motion interactivity, and by the way, largely in advertising, this was really what drove it in the beginning. They wanted to use motion and interactivity to, you know, deliver their message or communicate their position. So we gave that benefit both to the consumers who wanted to view the document or, you know, have the interactive experience with South Park or whatever it was, you know, Disney, all the varieties of things. So they wanted to have that experience, but there was also a benefit for the publisher, which is that they either reduced their costs or were able to be more effective in communicating their message.
I think that's good because you can give away DVDs all you want, but if no one owns the DVD player, you're not going anywhere.
Absolutely.
What do you think the obstacles were in becoming so widely adopted that people should be keeping in mind as they try to make Skype the voice over IP for everyone, or they try to make something we don't even know about? What do you think the obstacles that they should be aware of as you look back using your BA from Harvard in technology history and think what the obstacles were for Adobe, or Macromedia for that matter?
You know, honestly, the obstacles were, you know, one is you want to make the customer experience as good as possible. And that's hard. It's not necessarily that that's like something that you don't want to do. It's just very hard to do. And to get that right, particularly as the internet was changing so rapidly, to determine, you know, what the right thing to do, that's hard. So you got to make customer experience great. I think that's critical. I think another thing is you've got to really understand your customers, the benefit that you're giving them. So in the case of say the reader or in Flash, I think we had a pretty good handle on why people wanted to do it. You know, in the case of Flash, we knew people wanted to have richer media advertising, and we knew that they wanted richer content. We knew that, and we were able to solve that problem for them very well. We built an authoring tool that made it possible to create, you know, incredible animated content that was, you know, that the customer experience was great. The third thing was, you know, I think we solved some pretty good technical problems. You know, in the case of Flash, the technical problems were, you know, how do you do all this stuff in such a small package? And that's not an easy one. That we had some very, very, very bright people, John Gay, you know, Kevin Lynch, other folks among them, who really drove some of these incredibly, you know, innovative solutions to very hard problems. And on the reader side, same thing. You know, how do you make sure that a document will be able to print on any platform? You know, any operating system, any computer platform, to any printer, like that's a hard problem, and you know, we had to solve those problems. So those are some of the obstacles. You know, I'd say that you know, there were a lot of little multimedia technologies that never really took off, and at the end of the day, I think it goes right back to the customer experience that was provided and the value and benefit to the people who were producing information.
And when we come back from our second last break, we'll continue this dialogue about how to get your platform adopted with Mr. Tom Hale from Adobe. You're listening to the Wise Words podcast, www.seanwise.com.
It's sponsor time!
Hey, you. Yeah, you. Talking to you. Look at me. Canadian Tech Mob. That's what it's all about. You need to join. Hit the website, www.canadiantechmob.com. Show your support. Join the mob.
And And we're back. And Tom, you've just shared with us some of Adobe's, or your thoughts on how Adobe's become so widely adopted, how the Macromedia Flash players become so widely adopted. Let's change it a little bit. Let's say you decide to cash out your options tomorrow. I don't want to, no one's implying you're going to. I don't want anyone to be concerned. But and you decide to join a startup, whether it be a RIA or a DabbleDB or a platform. You have a momentary lapse in reason. Okay, you don't tell your family, you just sneak off and go and do it. And they hire you because they want to get this sort of adoption. What are sort of the first one, two, three things you would want them to focus on?
Well, I obviously it depends a lot on what kind of startup it is. And so I'll bucket them into two kinds. You know, if it's a consumer startup, clearly it's the free, you know, come up with a free either piece of technology or service or value proposition that will get you jump started, and I think that's very important, particularly as you're trying to do a startup. I think it's very, very hard to get any kind of broad attraction if you don't have some component of your business model that is friction-free adoption, right? Whether it's you're targeting developers, consumers, or individuals who are trying to do something, you know, productivity-wise. I think free is a very key component of it. You know, the second thing obviously is focus. Particularly in a startup case, most startups have visions that are big enough to change the world. That's why they're startups, and that's why they get funded. But you have to be very careful not to to try and boil the ocean, because that will bring you down. You have to at least have a very clear sequencing. And you know, I know that most successful startups that I've been able to observe have that kind of very clear focus. You know, of what they're going to do. If I put them in the other bucket and I say if you're doing an enterprise startup. You know, I think if you're trying to target the enterprise software space, to me, one of the things that I use as a way of judging the ability for a startup to get off the ground is you look at the pain of the problem, and you look at to some degree the scope of the problem. So if you're a startup, you know, try and solve a very specific, relatively small problem, because the big guys aren't going to solve it. You know, they're gonna probably want to work with you to figure out how to solve it. So find something small. You know, I guess this is focus in general, but you know, try and find something that's very painful, something that costs a lot of money for enterprise. Because frankly, most enterprise software sales are, hey, you're spending X, you know, million over here. If you use our stuff, it'll cost you $200,000, and you know, you're gonna save eight, you know, 1.8, and that's a great deal. So let's go do it. That would be sort of, you know, some pretty simplistic advice, but those would be some of the first things I would look at.
And what would the warnings be? Why do you think that so many technology platforms end up in the bin as opposed to end up on everyone's desktop? Is it because they don't make the right strategic moves? They don't give away the razor and sell for the cartridges? They don't, you know, use the drug dealer mentality where the first hit's free? Why do you think that so many people, are they overscoping? Are they trying to do too much? Are they not forming the right distribution deals?
Well, I think maybe the most important thing is, you know, are you solving a problem that is a real problem that people want solved and that they're willing to pay for? Or you know, even in the sense of a free piece of software, they're willing to take action to get that problem solved. You know, I'm willing to go to Adobe and download a free photo management tool because I really want to manage my photos. So you have to make sure that what you're doing is useful. And I guess that's, you know, those two things in business, right? Knowing what to do and doing it. So I'm emphasizing the knowing what to do part. I think if you don't have a good idea, you know, better stay put.
So no matter how good your idea is, you need to be able to execute. And if you can execute, you got to make sure you have a good idea to start with. Wise words. And when we come back with Mr. Tom Hale from Adobe, we are going to wrap up with the three questions we ask all of our gurus. You'll be right back with Wise Words from the IBD Network.
It's sponsored
by IBD Network. Producers of the acclaimed Under the Radar Conference are hosting the Momentum Growth Conference September 27th through 28th, 2006 at the Computer History Museum in Mountain View, California. Join tech heavyweights including Yahoo, Google, AOL, MSN, News Corp, Viacom, and many more. This year's conference will focus on the exploding digital convergence ecosystem from content creation to distribution and everything in between. For more information, visit MomentumConf.com.
And And we're back. We're speaking to Harvard graduate and senior vice president of Knowledge Worker Solutions Business Unit at Adobe Systems, a gentleman who's been selling software since he didn't have a VP on his card. And Tom, thank you very much for staying with me and up with our listeners.
My pleasure.
We're going to wrap up with the three questions we ask all of our guests. So without further ado, let's get right into it. Tom, what is the best advice you've ever received?
So props will go out to Norm Meyerowitz, who was for a long time the CTO and president of products at Macromedia. He, on the day that I was promoted to a VP, he sent me a list of 15 things that you have to do as a VP. I was pretty young at the time. I was probably, 28 or something, probably pretty green too. And these 15 rules were tremendous. The one that that really stuck out for me was to hire well. And again, that's pretty good common sense, but it's unbelievably critical.
Hire well. Can you give us some insights on how you'd advise people to hire well?
Well, you hire people. There's a bunch of cliches here, but you hire people who are better than you. You hire people who have domain expertise that you don't have. You hire people who are unlike you, so you get complementary skills. You hire people who. In many cases, you hire the athletes as opposed to the wise old man, because the athlete's hungrier, and the skills that he or she does not have, they will develop and acquire. Hire people who are problem solvers, not people who have the solution. And those are all sort of the old saws of hiring. But that's the first ingredient. After having a great idea, if you don't have great people, then it's very difficult to be great.
Go to question number two. What was your biggest mistake, and what can we learn from it?
So this is a great question, because probably the biggest mistake actually was trying to compete with a competitor I could never win. So I guess it goes under the category of try not to tilt at windmills. And the example here is we had an imaging product that was the company that Macromedia had acquired. And our strategy was to take on and defeat Photoshop. And I think it was when we did a little bit of math to determine how many man years of engineering effort it would take to achieve feature parity with Photoshop. That was when we realized that we probably shouldn't be in that business. And I think the things that we learned from that were, if you're going to go after an established competitor or an entrenched market, which is good, right, because people are spending money there, you have to have an idea that disrupts the market or changes the game or changes the business model. You can't compete on the same terms as your competitor, because your competitor is already entrenched. It's very hard to win. So that's probably the biggest mistake, because we actually spent a fair amount of time and energy trying to compete before we threw in the towel.
So don't play by rules that you can't win at. That's sort of the Kobayashi Maru test that Captain Kirk, I think, in Wrath of Khan, the second Star Trek movie, applied. But just so our readers know, tilting at windmills, do you want to explain that for those people who are the MySpace generation?
I believe this is the Harvard version. That's from Don Quixote.
Yeah.
And Don Quixote and his little buddy on the burro, Sancho Panza, went off and tried to kill dragons, which actually turned out to be windmills. And so the phrase tilting at windmills is, attacking things that, like windmills, aren't going to really yield to the two individuals on horses.
I don't know. If they brought a couple of sledgehammers, they might have been able to take those dragons / windmills, but I'm wondering what else in the Dutch countryside that they were consuming if they thought that they were dragons. But that's another story. I guess we'll have to ask someone else on that. Let's go to our third and final question today, Tom, and thank you for being so patient and sharing so much of your insights. What do you really wish others knew, or if you could sit down with some of our listeners, what's the one piece of advice you would like to give?
The simple answer is to spend time with customers or users of your product. I think all too often, in technology, people live in their ivory towers and they say, this is going to happen and everyone needs it. But there's a very good acid test for that, and it's called putting it in front of customers and seeing what they say. I think both Macromedia and Adobe, Macromedia was and Adobe is, they're huge proponents of interacting with customers to learn. You'll discover things through serendipity that you might not have otherwise discovered. You'll learn what's important. You'll learn what's not important. You will, foster strong relationships. I think we believe very strongly in, involving customers in our development process and heeding their advice, involving them in our business process. You know, if I were to net that out, you know, maybe you think about spending some portion of your time, you know, I don't know, is it 15, is it 20% of your time with customers talking about their problems? And then you're going to make sure that you end up on something that's really going to be valuable for them.
You know, Tom, and that's valuable to us in our last podcast with internationally best-selling author Mr. Len Brody. He did talk about the percentage of breakdowns, and it was very similar about focusing on the customers. I think some people are still caught up on the pre-bubble terms where they think proof of concept is you flick the light switch and the light goes on, where today we think proof of concept is you flick the light switch, the light goes on, and someone will pay you to read it.
Right.
Well, I want to thank you very much, and on behalf of the IBD Network and the Wise Words audience, you've been absolutely insightful. This has been Mr. Tom Hale from Adobe, the company voted by Fortune since 2001 as one of the top 10 places to work in the country, and now we can see why. Thank you, Tom, for sharing with us all the insights you had on getting your platform adopted.
Thank you, Sean. Thanks for having me on the show.
It's absolutely our pleasure. When we come back, we'll wrap up.
It's sponsor time!
Are you frustrated searching on the web and not being able to find what you're looking for? We've got your solution. Zigtag makes it easy to search, save, and share any information that's important to you, be it your latest recipes, information on your next big vacation, researching your competition or writing a business report, or even your school paper. Anything that's important to you, Zigtag makes it super easy to search, save, and share. For more information, visit www.zigtag.com.
And that wraps up another interview and another podcast. You've been listening to the Wise Words podcast, brought to you by the fine folks at IBD Network. For the best of Silicon Valley, go to www.ibdnetwork.com. Tune in next week for more best practices, insights, and interviews on entrepreneurship, finance, and technology. Till then, I'm your host, Sean Wise. You can reach me at www.seanwise.com. Thank you, and good venturing.